Hello and welcome to Media Geek. This is your weekly look at the world of grassroots and independent media, as well as a critical examination of our media environment. My name is Paul Rees-Mandel, and I'm your host. On today's program, bringing critical communications resources to Central America, we're going to talk about the Primary Communications Project with Bill Taylor and Adrian Bauer. And also, we'll find out what musicians are joining in on the fight to save the internet as we know it. It's a full program. You will want to stay tuned. Well, Bill and Adrian, thanks for joining me here in the West Studios.
Thank you.
And I guess you've both recently returned from Honduras, correct? Where you're working on a project.
Yeah, about a week and a half ago, we came back, and we're working with indigenous people, which is pretty common to what we do, indigenous people in southwest Honduras, in La Esperanza, in Tibucá. That's the part of the country.
And so what are you doing there?
Well, we're working with them on a radio project. They have a small radio station there right now. It's very, very low power. And they're looking to up power to expand their coverage area because the Lenca people live in a larger area than they can cover right now. And they're a very political group, and so they want to be able to have some ability to mobilize and to get their word out to people because they have a lot of supporters, but the communication is basically based on radio if you want to talk to people who don't have electricity or phone lines.
Is this AM or FM radio?
We're going to be putting an AM station in there.
Wow.
Yeah.
And how large of an AM station are you bringing down?
It's 100 watts. 1,000 watts?
Yeah, a kilowatt.
One kilowatt.
Wow,
one full kilowatt.
Yeah.
On AM, that's really significant. AM gets out a lot farther than FM for the watts.
Is this a mountainous region?
Yes, very mountainous. Most of Honduras is, but in western Honduras is quite mountainous, and the people live in valleys all over the area, and so to penetrate that with any kind of direct line of sight stuff like FM is almost impossible. So AM is where it's at.
Are they currently using AM or are they currently using FM?
They currently have an FM station, and it's, again, small, so it overlooks the community of La Esperanza, which is actually kind of a bigger city for Honduras. And because it's mountainous, it's kind of set in a valley, it's up high, it can get a lot of La Esperanza. But again, there's curves that people can't get it, you know, that kind of thing. Coverage problems, even with their little station.
And what have they been using their station for so far, their FM station?
They have quite a variety of programming. They run about 10 hours a day, and they do things about the environment. They have a religious program that has little, well, everybody's very religious. They're nominally Catholic, but they also have a lot of their indigenous religion mixed in with that. But they have stories that kind of affirm the Lenca culture and the people as Mayan people going way back. They have stories, they have programs on agriculture, and everybody's, almost all the Lencas are subsistence farmers, so that's a huge thing. Right now, a good part of the Lenca territory is threatened with inundation in a big dam project, which is funded by the World Bank. It spills over onto Honduras and El Salvador. It's the river that divides the two. And they're strongly opposed to that, so they're doing a lot of organizing and protesting against that, so they cover that kind of thing. I should say also that they do have a one-hour program on an AM station that they're buying the time on. It's a commercial station, and that is widely listened to and influential in the country, actually. They've said things on the air there that have influenced national policy, and that's a 1 kilowatt station as well. So they're very excited about getting their own station, especially since that station has the disadvantage of going off the air if they start to talk about anything controversial.
Oh, the commercial station?
Yeah.
So there's fair degree of government repression in Honduras against the press?
Yeah, like everywhere.
Really? Okay.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. But especially when you start getting influence, and a way to get influence through radio is if you have a radio station and you're saying things that people support, then that is a huge influence, and that's something that I don't think there's anything like that here with any form of communication where it's that widely listened to or that widely heard. You know what I mean? Even a radio station here of 1 kilowatt serving a similar percentage of people doesn't have nearly the effect, because the people there, the way communication works, radio is so key that really a lot of people hear it. And since these people not having radio stations or the ability to be on the air because most of it's commercial, once they have a way to get out and talk to people really rally around that. And so it has been really, especially in this whole with the project, the dam project, there's been a whole support around that that's been built largely through this program.
Mm-hmm. So the dam, the flooding it would cause, threatens to really just wipe out their way of life?
Not all, not everybody, but a large area, yeah. Yeah. So
a lot of people's land.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, when the people lose their land, and if you're uneducated and you're a subsistence farmer, you don't know anything else, you lose your land, it's pretty devastating.
Mm-hmm.
Also, since basically your land is your only asset, so it's the only thing you have to pass on to your family and keep your family going, really. Mm-hmm. The station is being built in cooperation with an organization called COPINH, COPINH, and has a silent H in it, as almost all Honduran organizations do, because Spanish, the H is silent, but Honduras starts with an H, so you never know where to put the H. But but anyway, they have a website. Should I give that?
Sure.
It's kind of strange. So it's http://rds, not www, it's rds.org.hn, and then / COPINH, COPINH, and that's how you get to them.
Okay, and we'll be sure to put a link on the Media Geek website right after the show's over here at MediaGeek.net, so people can also find it. It's the station that they have, is it a licensed station? Because it seems like there's a fair degree of media consolidation there on Doris.
Actually, they have that low-power station in La Esperanza. It's a FM station. It's actually 300 watts, which is not terribly low, but it's pretty low. And then they have a second one in Concepcion, which is another town in the department of Indibucá. Those currently are not licensed, but there was a convenio, it's like an international agreement that was ratified some time ago that promises indigenous people radio access. And so under that, they're not only getting those two FM stations licensed, but also the AM station that we're putting in. And I think probably the AM band is pretty frozen solid. It is in most parts of the world. And there are right now about over 100 AM stations. In Honduras, the AM and FM licenses come together. So if you get an AM license, you get an FM license, and commonly they'll use the FM for a low-power station to serve the immediate community and the AM for the regional.
Mm-hmm.
And that's pretty common to all. A lot of radio stations in Honduras.
Now, a 1 kilowatt AM transmitter is not necessarily a small device, is it? Nor an inexpensive device. You're shaking your head very, very strongly there, Adrian.
Well, that's one of those things that going down, working with these people, we had a big meeting. We went to visit because we had a little bit of, the communication was a little difficult via email, just because what you were talking about was so foreign to each other. We didn't know where they were really, and they didn't know where we were really. So we went down and spoke to them, and that was one of those things that they were like, whoa, this is big. This is a really big tower that we got to build, and this mm-hmm. is a really big use of equipment, you know? And that was kind of a shock, I think, because they've been working with very low power where there's like small FM equipment.
Right, it's the size
of like a...
have a
little mixer that's, you know, about the size of a cereal box, you know?
It's like a stereo system, whereas the
yeah,
AM...
Yeah, this is going to be seriously larger, considerably so. So it's going to take a big trip down there with a lot of equipment that we're putting together here in the States.
So where are you getting your equipment from?
We get donated equipment from radio stations and stuff, and actually the transmitter for this will probably come from a local station mm-hmm. from WDWS.
Oh, great.
And it's about the size physically of a upright freezer, sort of, a little bigger, and it weighs quite a bit more because it's got a lot of iron in the transformers in the bottom, about 600 pounds. But as radio transmitters go, it's not that huge.
And how are you going to get that down to Honduras?
We'll drive it down in a truck.
Yeah. And do you...
we're looking for a truck. If anybody has a truck.
Yes.
We have a pickup truck that we'll drive it down in, but if anybody has a box truck or knows how we might latch on to one of those, that would be preferable for sure.
Do you encounter any legal hassles or any hassles from governments as you drive through? You're nodding yes there, Adrian.
Well, I think that's one of those things that is to yet be worked out exactly, because it is one of those things that each government has their own set of law. A lot of times when you drive through, I guess you can get it sealed, and if the seal stays on from one border to the next, they don't give you
right.
so much hassles.
You have to go through Mexico and Guatemala.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And there's a lot of border stamping paper, you know.
Mm-hmm. But coming in Honduras, Honduras, if we have the equipment list all figured out
right.
Like a month in advance or more, that can be submitted to the government and pre-approved. And since it's a nonprofit organization we're working with, and we are a nonprofit organization, and the equipment is being donated, that should be able to be done without cost. The power of radio is really hard to imagine in this country where, you know, by and large... Not this show excepted, of course, but by and large, radio is a jukebox. You mm-hmm. know, basically people turn it on and have it in the background all day, and it's, you know, just music going in
There's
the background.
Some news, though.
Yeah, there is. But, I mean, basically that's what people think of when they think of radio in this country, unfortunately. Of course, community radio is totally different, but...
but unfortunately, only a couple of stations on the dial if you're lucky.
Yeah, right. So it's hard to imagine a station that is so vital to the people's way of life. But if you can't read, if you don't have a telephone, and if you don't have any entertainment, you know, in your town, and if you don't have a town, if you live out in the country where it takes a 4-hour walk just to get to the nearest road, then your little transistor radio is a really important thing. And to most of the people in our area, their transistor radio is their lifeline to the outside world. It's their most prized possession.
Right. And so do you need help? Financial
yes.
or muscle, people power?
All of the above.
All of the above, yes. Okay. This is the first time we've ever done a big project without a major grant
okay.
from a granting organization. So we're trying to raise the money little by little in fundraisers and things like that. We will have another. We had a fundraising concert that was quite successful just before we left. People have donated stuff personally, and, you know, just individually giving money. And we have a another fundraiser coming up this summer sometime, but we don't have the exact date for that, unfortunately.
Okay, and if anyone wanted to find out more about the project, you have a website?
Yes, it's www.radiopcp, that's Peter, Charlie, Peter, .org.
And people could find out how they could maybe either volunteer or send along equipment or funds to help you out?
That's all there.
And it's under development, but it's coming along. The website is coming along nicely.
So. Great. Well, Bill Taylor, Adrian Bauer from the Primary Communications Project, thank you very much, and very good luck to you bringing this vital medium down to Honduras and the Lenca people.
Thank you very much for letting us talk.
Absolutely.
As has already been stated, there will be new anti-terrorism legislation in the autumn. This will include an offence of condoning or glorifying bookshops and anyone who has participated in the community or has anything to do with it in any way will automatically be subject to torture or ill treatment. This will also be applied to justifying or glorifying anything to do with the European Convention on Human Rights. Let no one be in any doubt, the rules of the game are changing.
And you are listening to Media Geek. I'm your host, Paul Reismandel. Just about every week this year so far here on Media Geek, I've tried to keep listeners up to date with what's happening in the fight to preserve free speech on the internet as we know it. The COPE Act is legislation in the House that would re-regulate cable TV service and speed the entry of the nation's largest telephone companies into the cable TV market, where they would provide video services over their broadband internet lines. With entry into the cable TV market, the telephone companies would have incentive to limit their customers' access to broadband video and media content from the internet in order to entice customers to purchase content directly from them. And executives from the three largest telephone companies have all publicly expressed a desire to charge internet content creators for the supposed privilege of sending content and information to their DSL customers. The COPE Act, which makes all this possible, does not yet have any language that would prevent the telephone companies from filtering or limiting the transmission of internet content. The House Energy and Commerce Committee voted down an amendment that would have enshrined these network neutrality principles into law. But since that unfortunate vote, the grassroots campaign to get Congress to guarantee internet freedom and network neutrality has picked up steam, while the House Republican leadership has been reluctant to bring the COPE Act to the floor for a full vote. On May 11th, the Save the Internet campaign hosted a telephone conference and Washington press conference to announce the creation of a new coalition of musical artists joining the effort. Popular electronic music artist Moby announced the coalition and its reason for being.
So as we all know, internet freedom is under attack by big companies like AT&T and by some members of Congress who would give corporations control of the internet rather than honor the desire of their constituents for a free and open internet. I'm here today as one of over 650,000 Americans who signed the SaveTheInternet.com Coalition's petition to Congress in support of internet freedom. I'm also here today to announce the artists and musicians for internet freedom who have signed a petition and are joining SaveTheInternet.com. Thus far, some other artists included in this are REM, Q-Tip, Trent Reznor from Nine Inch Nails, Indigo Girls, and Wilco, and with more people signing up every day. We are here today to put Congress on notice. Your constituents are watching, and you will be held accountable for your vote on this issue. You will not be allowed to sell out the Internet to companies like AT&T without a huge public backlash. If you vote against Internet freedom and net neutrality, don't be surprised if your constituents vote against you in November. Internet freedom is not a partisan issue because the Internet affects everyone, Republicans and Democrats. And Internet freedom is not an irrelevant issue because it affects everything else. The Internet has revolutionized democratic participation, economic innovation, free speech, and the arts. And there's a reason groups as diverse as MoveOn.org, the Gun Owners of America, Christian Coalition, consumer advocates, and church groups are all working together on this issue. And there's a reason why people's favorite websites, be they Google, Amazon, eBay, Craigslist, are all fighting together to preserve net neutrality. If Congress guts net neutrality, independent music and news sites would be choked off, consumer choice would be limited, and the Internet will become a private toll road auctioned off by companies like AT&T. And that's why there's a huge public backlash going on. Artists and musicians who aren't involved in politics on a day-to-day basis are getting involved. Hundreds of thousands of everyday Americans sign petitions to Congress, including those who usually are not involved in politics. Thousands of average Joes who use MySpace have joined Save the Internet's MySpace space as a friend. Thousands of local websites that don't normally write about politics have written about and linked to the SaveTheInternet.com coalition, and thousands upon thousands of people are calling their congressional representatives every day. So we, as part of this coalition, are asking people to tell their House members to support Representative Ed Markey's net neutrality amendment. We're asking them to tell their senators to support the bipartisan net neutrality proposal that will be offered by Senator Snow, a Republican, and Senator Dorgan, a Democrat, the Snow-Dorgan bill. And we're asking people to please stand up for Internet freedom. Congress must uphold network neutrality, and I'm here today to put Congress on notice that America is paying attention and will hold them accountable on this issue. So please, please, if possible, give us all the support that you can. Thank you.
Democratic Representative Edward Markey of Massachusetts is the ranking Democrat on the House Energy and Commerce Committee and has been the most outspoken advocate of net neutrality in the House. He sponsored the net neutrality amendment to the COPE Act that was rejected by his committee and has sponsored additional network neutrality legislation. He joined the conference to discuss how his fellow congresspeople are starting to change their tune.
My amendment was not warmly received at the subcommittee level, but when the internet community began to get organized, there was a dramatic increase in the amount of support which I received at the full committee level. And this intensity, as Moby just said, gathering 650,000 signatures in a very brief period of time, has helped to draw the attention to this issue, which is transforming the way in which the whole issue is being viewed by the political world in Washington. So the real challenge here is just to make sure that a small handful of companies don't dominate the Internet, but rather we have this world where entrepreneurial zeal, smaller voices, the creative community, the innovators are allowed to continue unimpeded to gain access to the Internet in a way that will change the world. And I think that that Moby, in a lot of ways, represents the changing political dynamic of this issue, and it is morphing into something which is unprecedented. The Internet is arriving as a political force in legislation on this issue, and the irony is that the very nature of the Internet is being debated and could be saved by the Internet itself and the participation of all of these forces that are now joining into the argument.
I had the opportunity to ask Moby how major recording artists like himself would be affected if network neutrality is not made into law and the telephone companies are permitted to start placing limits on the free flow of Internet content.
Well, the truth is it would affect smaller, more independent artists much more than better established artists. I mean, professionally, my career probably wouldn't be impacted by this much at all. But that's not necessarily why I'm here. I mean, because in addition to being a musician, I'm also someone who uses the Internet for a lot of other purposes. And, you know, and also, but really the most successful record I've had was an album called Play that was released in 1999. And one of the reasons it did well was because sort of it spread virally and word of mouth. And I think that that's one of the great things that, that you're able to accomplish with the Internet as it is, you know, it is egalitarian and open, and information can be spread purely on the strength of the information and not on the criteria or bias of the gatekeepers. And, you know, that's one of the things that concerns me the most, is that you know, suddenly you're going to have people whose criteria for determining what information is passed and what's not is really not going to be democratic at all.
Tim Carr, the campaign director for the media reform organization Free Press, also joined this conference call, and I asked him how congresspeople are justifying their votes against network neutrality, and especially how liberal Democrats are justifying their positions opposing Internet freedom.
Well, I think that there's been a very effective, what I would call, misinformation campaign that's been mobilized by the telecom sector and the cable sector in Washington, and they have armies of lobbyists that are knocking on doors on Capitol Hill on quite a regular basis. And unfortunately, these groups have framed this as an issue about overriding new government regulation of the Internet. What we're asking for is to keep existing regulation, existing rules that have kept the Internet free and open in place. We're not asking that, and certainly they're being told a quite a different story. So we are confident that as more and more Americans reach out to their representatives and express their concerns, that many of these representatives who are voting against network neutrality will change their tune. And to some extent, that's already happening. We did have some representatives who were voted at the subcommittee and committee level change their vote from the subcommittee, the Commerce Subcommittee, to the committee level vote. We continue to call, thousands of people are calling the representatives in Washington, and hopefully there will be a significant change in favor of net neutrality legislation like Representative Markey's bill.
The future of the COPE Act and network neutrality in the House has been the subject of an attempted power play by Republican Representative James Sensenbrenner of Wisconsin, who is the chair of the Justice Committee. Sensenbrenner, a harsh critic of the large telephone companies, was trying to bring the COPE Act into his committee for review, keeping his eye on network neutrality and how it relates to antitrust concerns. But late on May 18th, Sensenbrenner's request for review was denied by the House parliamentarian. But the delay on the COPE Act means it will probably not reach the House floor for a vote until after the Memorial Day holiday. Following that denial, Sensenbrenner introduced his own network neutrality bill, co-authored with ranking Judiciary Democrat John Conyers of Michigan. Their bill would require broadband operators to provide services on reasonable and non-discriminatory terms. It would further stipulate that broadband providers must interconnect their facilities with other companies and could not block or impair internet customers. The Sensenbrenner-Conyers bill will likely be considered by the Judiciary Committee during the week of May 22nd before the COPE Act reaches the House floor. To keep up to date with how well the future of the internet is faring in Washington and elsewhere, keep listening to MediaGeek and check out the MediaGeek website at MediaGeek.net. Also, be sure to go to SaveTheInternet.com, where you can find out where your own representatives stand on the issue and use easy tools to let them know your opinion on preserving free speech on the internet. That brings to a close another edition of Media Geek. I'm your host and producer, Paul Riesmandel, and I'll be back in 1 week with more news about grassroots and independent media, as well as our media environment. In the meantime, check out Media Geek online at MediaGeek.net, where you'll find the Media Geek blog with frequently updated news and views about our media. You can also download the program at radio.mediageek.net or subscribe to the podcast to have it automatically downloaded to your computer or MP3 player. That's all at MediaGeek.net. The closing music is Fire in the Sky by Adam Lowow. Media Geek is produced live at Community Radio WEFT in Champaign, Illinois. Some segments are pre-recorded at Media Geek Studios. And Media Geek is heard on 9 other community stations around North America, including KRFP in Moscow, Idaho, KQRP in Salida, California, KRBS in Oroville, California, WSLR in Sarasota, Florida, WTND in Macomb, Illinois, WRFA in Jamestown, New York, WYQZ in Warrenton-Bealeton, Virginia, CKDU in Halifax, Nova Scotia, and Free Radio Olympia in Olympia, Washington. Media Geek is free to air on your local community radio station, too. Just drop me a line at paul@mediageek.org. That email address is also good for any comments you want to send in about the program. Once again, that's paul@mediageek.org. Thanks for tuning in.